Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, as Tara Reed said, it's a beautiful day in Dallas. On set of our new show, The Big, Big Show, we are shooting in Dallas with the Real Dice Clay, Tom Green, and Tommy Habib One. It's going to be so fun. It may be a beautiful day in Dallas, Matt, but I've been talked out of the Dallas Mavericks.
You've given up the ghost?
I'm already out on them. I was in an NBA arena last night. I was at the Target Center for a little preseason action, and going over the Western Conference likelihoods of getting those final two seeds. And I got to say, I was trying to make a case for the Mavericks of why I like them. I've liked them for about a month now, and I thought, like, nah, they're, you know, this and this. They just can't have any big injuries. But like, I like this, and a couple of writers that I really respect have talked me right out of them. So I think I'm already done. I'm just hoping for a lot of Ricky Lito time.
It's hard to peg, because you've seen unlikely combinations work before.
Right.
We've seen this happen where, oh, that team's going to be terrible. And then, you know, Zach Randolph was a guy that, you know, really everyone had kind of given up on and thought that he was just a guy that put up points and was never going to contribute to a winning team. And then he went to Memphis with Tony Allen. And personally, I credit Platinum for shutting down. That's where I wind up putting all of the benefit, is the fact that the arguably the best strip club on the planet, Platinum, shut down. That's what they would say to the Memphis Grizzlies. But regardless, that worked out. Maybe this is what Ellis needs to have it all. Maybe this is the situation. Although him saying on opening night that Monte Ball is back, that's what he's got to get back to, is Monte Ball. That terrifies me.
Yeah, that's a little scary. And then I, you know, he was like, how are they going to defend? I was like, well, they got Sam Dallinger back there. First I was talking to him, he was like, you got to be kidding me. I was like, I don't know, he can block shots. He's like, no. He's like, this is not, he's not going to rotate as much as you need to. And then the defensive combination of Calderon and Ellis, I was like, maybe there'll be enough offense. And like, no. And then I read today that Carlisle is concerned with Dallinger's conditioning. So there you go. That was the final straw. That I was a little in, and then I read that this morning, and now I'm done.
Well, let me try and talk you back out of it. Let me try to talk back into it, rather. Brandon Wright really was pretty good last year.
Yeah, I know you're not
big on him, but he's adapted his game. He is a true big now. He's got good length, and he worked under Tyson. He learned a lot under Tyson.
Sure. No, he did. It's still, how much is he going to play? And is that going to be effective enough? I mean, he played 18 minutes a game last year. Is that going to be enough?
Well, he was jerking everyone around with their rotations.
Is it possible that maybe he was just worried that Brandon Wright would disintegrate if he played more than 18 minutes a game? Because that's usually what happens.
By the way, he learned absolutely nothing from Tyson Chandler. He came in 2012 after Tyson was there.
Okay. But the spirit was still there.
The spirit was still there. I don't know. I think that – I really thought Carlisle did a pretty poor job coaching last year, which was surprising, because I love the man and think he's incredible and think that he's one of the top five coaches in the NBA. But I feel like he really struggled, because he was just – at some level, you have to give someone on your team that's not Dirk Nowitzki confidence. Like, you have to instill confidence in somebody. And he was basically like, oh, hey, you played really well for three quarters. You've had a bad quarter. You're out of here. Go sit down. Go sit in the corner. And he was like my wife with her fantasy team.
Yeah.
Because my wife every single Sunday is like, I'm benching that guy next week. I'm like, that's Darren McFadden. He's the only guy having a pretty good year for you. Whatever, he didn't have a good game. Like, she just completely does this every single year with every person on our team. If they have a bad week, she's like, I'm benching this person. I'm getting rid of him. I'm going to cut him. That's how Carlisle was last year. It was, oh, you had a really bad quarter. Let me completely destroy your confidence publicly and in the locker room and then bench you.
To be fair, the bookends of that lineup often, and by that I mean the point guard center, were Darren Collison and Chris Kaman. He might have just seen that and been like, there's no need to coach this year.
No, but that was the thing, though, is Kaman, he trusted. He trusted. He did the age-old coaching thing of, I'm going to trust my veterans, no matter how stupid it is.
He only played 20 minutes a game.
I the thing I think you had to look at it with the minutes, though, is how they adjusted as the years went on. That, to me, is, like, a big deal. Because if and maybe I'm wrong, it felt like Collison played less and less and less and less and less, and obviously Mike James kind of, like, points to that. And then it felt to me like Kamen, he started leaning on more and more, like,
well, I think, I mean, we're never going to agree on Darren Collison. Darren Collison wasn't good, and he's not good, at least not as a starter.
He was good in Indiana.
He was all right.
No, he was good in Indiana. I will not give up on this.
On one side of the floor, sometimes. But yeah, so I've already written off the Mavericks.
I don't know what to make of them. I'm not including them in the playoffs right now just because I'm so big on Portland.
I was going to put them as the 8th seed, and I got talked right out of it last night, and now I will not do it.
I've got them in there because of Portland.
I've also was kind of talked out of Denver.
I've already got them out.
Yeah. I was holding on, and it's it might not be very good.
I mean, I have to see what they look like. Part of it is preseason's not going to tell us a damn thing because they're instilling too much stuff. And that first preseason game is kind of an indication of we don't know what we're doing.
I mean, the entire season really does hinge on JaVale McGee, right?
No, because I heard things immediately. See, here's the thing: is it's a big year for JaVale, but already I've started hearing. Like, it started on media day, and then again when I went to practice the other day, I started hearing. You know, Mozgov looks really good, and we really think that Mozzie can give us. And I was like, oh no. Because what that means is JaVale hasn't looked great in practice, and Mozgov is practicing better than him. And this is the exact same thing that happened with Kufis last year.
Right.
Exact same thing. And if he doesn't start on opening night, it's going to be just a riot. Like, I think probably management is just going to be like, no, we don't care. Like, no matter what, JaVale's got to start.
They're going to fire Brian Shaw during the intros?
Yeah, right? But at some level, he does have to take a step forward. I think that's big. I have a hard time. The Nuggets and the Mavericks, I think, are two teams I'm having a hard time figuring out. And we'll do this when we do the over-unders, which I want to do closer to the start of the season. I will say they have the Nuggets. One of the sportsbook I've seen that has the over-unders up right now has them at 47. Nuggets at 47 over-under.
Ooh, that seems high.
High. Seems high, like, high.
Like,
high,
if they're high. Getting in, they're getting in, like, 43, 44 wins, right?
But here's the thing, it's the West, so if they're getting in there, they probably are going to land up somewhere 45, 46 at least.
Yeah, maybe.
I think you got to be 4 games over 500 to make the playoffs.
Yeah, you had to win 45 last year to make the playoffs.
And the West is better.
Yeah, but, I mean, that also might mean that there are just fewer wins because everyone's so competitive now. You know, like, fewer high win totals.
But you have to factor in the tanking, though.
Yeah, but who's tanking in the West? I mean, Phoenix.
The Kings by March.
Kings, yeah. I mean, the Kings will be bad, but I don't know if they're going to tank.
I think we'll find a lot of teams.
Maybe they'll tank by default.
Part of it, though, also is, like, they do play a lot of teams in the West, but it just depends on what. Like, maybe this is worth going through. If your schedule is East heavy, if your schedule is bottom East heavy,
yeah, your
back end of your schedule could be really funky.
Yeah.
Because even if you're just East heavy in general, because if you wind up when you're playing the Heat and a couple other teams that are resting, you could wind up in a situation where you're really able to pad your win totals. I think it's very easy to get talked out of. I think you can talk. Well, I guess here's the difference. I thought you could talk yourself out of the Lakers, the Grizzlies, and the Mavericks very easily. And now I'm kind of like, I'm honestly a little bit like, am I too high on the Timberwolves? I had that thought last night. Like, am I overestimating the Timberwolves? Not from the perspective of can they be good, because I'm confident they will be good.
They could be a good team and not make the playoffs.
Yeah, and it's I could see them in a situation, because it's like Utah was a good team last year. Utah wasn't a bad team.
Oh, right, yeah.
They wound up on the outside because things didn't fall their way. And I could definitely see a situation in which the Timberwolves wind up just a few games short just because of injuries, or because I guess it's one of those, you have to have certain things that are going to pad you from the bad things that are going to happen to you. Like, you're going to lose a couple games.
Like defense?
We'll get to that in a second. Like, we talked about this before, how I believe that there's like 5 games a year where it's just a matter of weird stuff happens. Just weird things occur.
Right.
Tony Allen goes for 35 points. What are you going to do? Tony Allen went for 35 points. You accidentally, last year the Pacers, David West threw an inbounds directly to the Raptors at half court. Just threw a half court inbounds pass for no apparent reason and threw it right to the Raptors. These kind of things are weird, but they happen. So there's those five games, and then there's the defense. What'd you see last night from them in their first preseason game against Moscow, which was massive header? It's just the first preseason game.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Is like the starting unit did not play well in the first quarter. They looked really rusty. They looked like they weren't really taking it all that seriously. Adelman was furious after the game. Like, really didn't talk. Like, he talked for 3 minutes with reporters. And maybe that's just because it was a preseason game, or maybe he was just furious at the fact that he didn't like the effort that he saw and the execution and the stuff they had been working on. But he wasn't happy after the game, and I don't think it had anything to do with the loss, because I don't think he cares about preseason wins or losses. And so, like, the final quarter, like, last, like, I think 10 minutes of that game plus all of overtime, it was pretty much just Derek Williams, Roni Turioff, Alexei Shved, Othias Jeffers, and AJ Price. Like, and the, I would say the Moscow team ran with their best players pretty much that entire time. So you're looking at, like, basically a third string unit going against, you know, another team's best, probably best unit. And so, like, the loss is a little skewed, and it's still nothing an NBA team wants to do, but it's not as bad as it looks just on the surface. But with that said, like, they didn't play well for probably the first 20 minutes of that game. It didn't matter what unit they had, they just didn't play well. And the things that were apparent were, one, that they didn't look comfortable yet running the offense with each other. Two, Pekovic was great on defense. Rubio was great on defense. Like, Pekovic is, like, quietly a very above-average defender. I don't think people realize that just because he doesn't get blocks, but he's always in position, and he just kind of gets in the way. His pick and roll defense is good. Like, he was really good last night on defense. Rubio was awesome. Kevin Martin, not so much. And that was the key, is that they figured out early, we can just attack Kevin Martin. We can go at him in isolation. We can go at him in a pick and roll, and that's gonna be where we get our points. And there were some turnovers caused off good rotations in those moments that the Wolves didn't capitalize on because of missed transition shot attempts. But for the most part, it was kind of ugly whenever they went at Kevin Martin. And that's going to be the key, is how do they, and especially when Chase Budger comes back, how do you play Kevin Martin and Chase together? Like, Love and Pekovic have to be great on defense. Peck, I'm not so worried about. Love, you know, there are legitimate questions about whether he can be an impact player on defense. And, I mean, his effort was good last night defensively, I thought, for the most part, after the first few minutes. But you just got to be worried about the defense with them.
They shot 18% from three, didn't they?
They did. I think just to make everybody feel like they're at home.
They're back.
Yeah, they're back. It's like, hey, we're ready to do this. We're ready for another season.
I have this image in my head of CSK Moscow returning home, and the plane lands, and outside the airport, and there's all these people holding up, like, cheering for them and holding up signs with a Pekovic face and an X through it. And no one here realizes, but it's like a massive deal that they defeated Pekovic and survived.
I will say this, in the media section, it's like tiered rows, right? And so I'm in the second row of it, right near the Wolves bench, and then the row behind me, there were a bunch of Russian journalists that clearly, like, travel with the team. And they were, like, legitimately cheering every time Moscow made a play. It was kind of weird to experience.
Yeah, the international media does not understand our ways at all.
Yeah, which is fine. Like, I personally don't have a problem with it. It was just a different experience. It was like Sasha Khan gets a big dunk inside after, like, basically wrestling the ball away from two guards. and he gets this big dunk, and they're like, Sasha! It was an amazing experience to have them behind. I kind of want them there for every game.
Sonny Weems is on that team?
He is, but he didn't play.
What?
I think he's injured.
Huh.
Milos, what's his name? Milos Teodosic?
Yeah.
That guy, it's ridiculous he never came. Like, he should be in the NBA. I know they're
26-5-9 on 8-15. Dang.
And it was just like effortless. And he did. I mean, he did it against Kevin Martin. He had a couple of buckets against Rubio. Like, it didn't matter who was on him. He was just. I mean, that guy can flat out play. That's nothing new to international basketball fans. Like, this guy's been one of the better guards in Europe for a few years now, and he's always good in like the FIBA tournament play. But the fact that someone hasn't given him, I'll just say it, the fact that someone hasn't given him a double max contract and convince him to come over, it's a shame. I'd pay him $30 million a year. I'd give him Kobe money.
Kobe money. Yeah, you also got to see future Sixer, Jeremy Pargo.
Yes, I did. He looked good. He looked all right. There's actually a lot of talent on that team. They brought Kristic off the bench. They brought Teodosic off the bench.
If you're bringing Kristic off the bench, I'm pretty impressed because the Nod can play.
Yeah, and like this guy Kyle Hines is a 6'6 center in the Chuck Hayes build, but this guy, I don't know if in his spare time he's a bodybuilder, but he looked like one of the strongest people in the world. Like, that guy is built, and he actually did a pretty decent job of pushing the bigger Wolves front court players out of the post. So yeah, they had a great effort. They played really well. The Wolves played like crap. But you saw, I mean, I guess on the positive side, like, Rubio looked really comfortable scoring the ball. He had a couple of layups against defenders, which sounds basic, but stuff he hasn't done the last 2 years. I actually liked the way they got Kevin Martin a bunch of shots, and he missed a couple of easy ones, which throw off the shooting numbers. But they eventually got him in the flow of everything. Love looked pretty good after his first stint on the floor. His second stint was much better, and he moved the ball really well. They just did it, and I don't know if this is by design or what the game plan was going in, because they're not treating it like a regular NBA game because it's preseason. But they didn't do much of Peck and Love in the post, which I found really weird. Yeah, that's your Wolves update.
While you've been talking about this, all I've been doing is looking up when Moscow season ends, which is March 23rd. So that means Jeremy Pargo can sign with a team that's tanking on March 25th.
That's perfect.
Yeah, it works out well.
Yeah.
And the immutable law of the NBA that there must be a Pargo at all times as well.
Well, there's a Pargo. Isn't
Gennaro's on one of the teams, but Gennaro always gets waived. One of them gets waived and the other one gets signed.
Yeah, that's true.
It's part of the law. That one of the brothers is, because it used to be, for a while there, it was Jeremy started with the team, and then Jeremy got waived and Gennaro got signed, and now it's switched. So.
Yeah, Gennaro might be on the Bobcats? Is that where? Or maybe Milwaukee?
Sounds right.
He's on some terrible team. Sorry, Milwaukee. You might be good. Probably not.
Yeah, the Martin thing, I think, is probably a question mark.
Like, that's gonna be their biggest concern, is how do you hide Kevin Martin on defense?
The Nuggets, I feel like, to a certain degree, I'm a little bit worried because I think that in like a year, 2 years, there could be like all these features on Brian Shaw and like the breakout coach and what he's accomplished and all these things. But I think it's gonna be rough for a while he gets his footing, because here's an example. He said the other day, in practice, this is like the fourth day of practice, 2 days before the first preseason game, or 3 days before the first preseason game. And he was saying that, he's like, well, the problem that we're having right now is we need to get the pace up, because they're trying to execute new things, and that means that they're slowing down. I want them getting into those sets quicker. Like, they've got to go ahead and focus on getting into everything quicker, which is really weird to hear. Like, every Denver reporter was like, Denver needs to speed up? Like, it was confusing. I'm getting a little annoyed because, the Lakers broadcast team did this, and I feel like a lot of people are doing this where they're like, oh, well, that's Nuggets basketball. Those guys, they just get up and down the floor. And I'm like, they have a completely new coach. They have a completely new coach. Like, Carl's
right.
gone.
Right.
It's like, this is different. Yes, Ty Lawson is fast. And a part of it, I think, is that Shaw wants to play their strengths, and he knows that a lot of these guys are used to playing fast, so he doesn't want to make an immediate transition. So he's planned for, like, okay, let's get into our sets faster. But I asked him, I said, are you willing to give up a little bit of execution if they get into their sets faster? And he said, well, no. And I was kind of like,
Well,
I mean, part of it is just like, it's like a coaching thing, is you don't want to give up, you don't want to give up anything.
Right.
But it was just weird for me because, like, if I'm like running an office, I'd be like, well, okay, we're willing to sacrifice a little bit of this as long as we get this done. And that's not really kind of how it's going.
Yeah.
So it's weird that that's kind of the position that's being taken. It's basically like, no, you cannot, you know, you need to be better at your execution and you need to play fast. So I don't know how that's going to go. There are certain combinations that make a lot of sense. Like, Andre Miller is going to love passing to Nate Robinson because it's a veteran that he can trust and he knows. Like, a 3-yard lineup of Andre Miller, Nate Robinson, and Randy Foy is going to be really successful. But I think that's – like, there are certain things that are going to work and there are certain things that are just not going to make much sense at all. So, yeah, I'm not really sure what they're going to do. They were feeding him in the post. The biggest thing, I think it's really weird. So, Kenneth Faried is one of those guys every coach should love because he just gives you – he always plays hard. He's always focused. He always has energy. He's always ready to go. And he's got such a tough competitive mindset. But Brian Shaw, essentially, on the first day, and we saw this during the game, Brian Shaw is basically like, no, you have to have an offensive set. We need you to actually be an NBA player. And yeah. I don't know that Kenneth Faried can do that.
Yeah, he – I mean
– he took like 5 floaters in that preseason game, and I was like, what is happening?
Like, that's the shot you want.
And I felt bad for him because you can tell he's like, no, I can do this. I can do this. I can do this. And meanwhile, like, everyone at home is like, no, you can't. He can be productive if he's just rebounding and putting in tip backs, but
yeah, there's so many guys that it seems like a weird fit into the system of what's supposed to be a successful team.
Yeah.
Like, just, you know, even Randy Foy, like, he can hit shots, which is a big plus for them from outside, but, you know, is he going to work that well together if he's in a backcourt with Ty Lawson? That's kind of a weird fit. The fact that J.J. Hickson's going to be involved at all is a weird fit. You know, if you get the Nate Robinson of last year, that's awesome. If you get the Nate Robinson of any other year, I don't feel good about that. And then, can Wilson Chandler be consistently good enough to make up for the absence of Gallo? Like, there are so many questions. It's not questions that I think are impossible for them to solve. They're just a lot of questions.
We talked about this last year, my if postulate. If you find yourself going, if your list of ifs for a team to be good is more than like 5, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
And with the Nuggets team, it's, well, if Ty Lawson plays aggressive like he never does, and if, you know, Andre Miller really starts to buy into the team concept, which is a question, but Andre's going to be fine. He's consistent. If JaVale makes the jump, if Faried can find a role, if Hickson is – was so overrated last year, he became underrated. If Nate Robinson can play in a 2-guard set with another short guard, you know, if Wilson can keep up this production, like, everyone has, like, there's a lot of people that have questions about who exactly Wilson Chandler is. I tend to think that I paid more attention to Wilson Chandler than most. His biggest problems were just injuries. Like, that was a huge thing. That was why he fell off. He was great in New York offensively, and he's actually turned into a decent defender. Wilson Chandler is a good overall player. He's not a star player,
right,
but he's a guy that could be very good, being a significant offensive weapon for a team and a capable defender. And the fact that they're going to play him on the wing, I like a lot. I like they're not going to put him through the bruising of trying to play stretch 4.
Yeah, no, I like him, and I agree with everything you're saying there. It's just he's going to have to be the number 2 option, right?
Yeah.
Can he do that consistently? Like, I'm not saying he can. It's just – I think it's a legitimate question about his consistency, not necessarily his ability.
Yeah, he did it for most of the backstretch of last year after Gallo went down.
Yeah, that's true.
But then, you know, he also wanted to play in stretch 4 in the playoffs and got obliterated. So yeah, he had a terrible all season. By the way, speaking of stretch 4s that should not play there, Harrison Barnes, apparently his problem. You know, I talked about how bad he looked. He has a foot injury.
Oh,
so
there you go.
They're going to have an MRI on it. Jackson had to shut him down last night. So we'll see what they do. But, man, God, the Warriors look so good.
Iguodala is a perfect fit for that team.
He's so happy there, too. And you can just tell that he buys in. And
like, they're obviously not this good, so I hope it's not taken the wrong way. But it's almost that mentality he got, like, he kind of got to embrace on the Olympic team. And on the FIBA World's team is just like, just go there and be a defender and plug in the gaps. Like, you don't have, there's no responsibility on you outside of that. And then, you know, you'll make some plays here and there, and we'll get you the ball. But it's just like, he just seems so, so like relieved in that role, because he's so perfect in that role that he just, I mean, he's flying all over the court. He had a couple of alley-oops. Like, that was a, there was a Festus Ezeli, was it Festus?
No.
No, he's not. He's not. He's not in. Who there? Oh God, who was it?
Was it Draymond?
No, it was maybe. It was a big guy. I think it was. I think it was maybe Deadman. Got the ball to Bazemore, who got the ball to Iguodala on an alley oop that was just bizarre. Like, it just to see that, you see this big man end up with the ball around half court, dribble it up, toss it to Bazemore, tosses it back up to, at the rim, and Iguodala dunked it. Like, they're just these weird plays that he's making that are, that just, they're weird, but they make so much sense for him on this Warriors team.
He would never admit this because of, or I don't think he would admit this. I honestly feel that while the Denver fit may have not been great and ended badly, I do think that last year he learned what his role is in the NBA. This was the first time I've ever seen Iguodala really accept who he is.
Yeah.
And he came into last year talking about, I'm not just a defensive player. Like, I can do all these things offensively. And with the Warriors, he's coming in and be like, no, I pass. I defend. I make teams better. That's okay.
Yeah.
Like, there was a play last night where he came around a he came around a curl screen to the outside. Curry made a sick bounce pass to him. He caught it, and he had an open three, and he waited, and the defense was frozen, and Curry just calmly kind of sidestepped back to the corner. Iguodala calmly passed it to the corner, and Curry knocked it down, and immediately our friend of the program, Sherwood Strauss, tweeted something about Iguodala being the first Warrior in like 5 years to find Curry in the corner. And it was like, I immediately was like, oh, Ethan's gonna love that.
Oh, he's gonna
Jared
love
Jack
it.
Was shooting that last year.
Jared Jack had shot that and already moved back up the floor after
yep.
that.
Klay Thompson looks fantastic. I mean,
yeah, he really does.
And, you know, I did a Nods post yesterday breaking down.
That was a fun read. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was. I like the gambling stuff just from a more of an analysis standpoint. Everyone's like, "Well, how much do you actually gamble?" And I'm like, "I'm a blogger. How much money do you think I have? Like, I'm a blogger with a 2-year-old and a wife in grad school.
Yeah, you leave it. You cut it to like $100K a month.
Right,
that's
exactly
how much you gamble.
Yeah, you know,
nothing
I'm still stacking. I'm still stacking bennies, but
you know. Don't ever say that again, by the way.
Warriors are 13-1 to win the West.
Yeah, that's a good bet.
That's on us.
It's tough because it's hard for me to think like, I mean, I think they're up there, but to really commit to, yeah, the Warriors are going to win the West, that's just kind of a hard thing to do, right?
Not if you're just, the thing is like, you don't have to believe in something to gamble on it. Like, you're just looking for, I feel like this has a good possibility of happening. You know, compared to the odds, and 13-1.
If you're wondering what that silence out west was, it's just the city of Las Vegas lighting some candles and putting some silk sheets on the bed after you said that.
You know, it's interesting. Bovada, who has shorter odds in general on most things, but they've got him at 7-1.
Yeah.
And they're right behind the Spurs. The Rockets are they're lit. I always say Vegas, but these sports books are awful. Are offshore, so it's not really Vegas, but. Vegas in general they're big on the Rockets. They're big on the Rockets, and they're not big on the Spurs. The Spurs got disrespected.
Yeah, I mean, people just, they overlook them year after
year. Yeah, but I have to go back and see last year's odds, but I feel like Vegas historically doesn't do this with them. I feel like Vegas historically is like, no, it's the Spurs. They're pretty good. And yet, this year, they're big on the Clippers. Now, the Clippers, I think, is probably an action thing. The Clippers being, like, on one book, they're at Bovada, they're tied with the Thunder to win the West at 7-2. And I was like, that's got to be action. Like, they got to be shortening the odds because of the amount of action on the Clippers.
Yeah.
Because it's an L.A. team.
Right, you got all those Lakers fans jumping over.
Oh.
Just kidding, Lakers fans. Some of you are all right.
Oh. But yeah,
I'm bitter after the Dodgers Braves game last night. I'm actually not even bitter. I knew they were going to lose that series, and I'm glad that they did it in hilarious fashion. Sorry, we'll move on to basketball.
Not only were you confident that they were going to lose that series, you were defiant about it on Twitter. Like, everyone's like, well, no, like, this could, you know, because I almost wanted to be like, well, hey, it's baseball, man. Like, yeah, they're only, you know, it was like 5-4 in what, the eighth? And I was like, and you're like, well, this is done. And I was like, no, like, it's baseball. Like, it's completely arbitrary. Like, people just hit things. This is how baseball seems to me. People just hit things. You know, this could definitely happen, and it did not happen.
All week, people were like, no, if we can get to game five. I was like, yeah, I guess technically you're right, but this is done. This is absolutely done. It was a terrible matchup. If they were playing the Cardinals, I'd like it. If they were playing the Pirates, I'd like it. I hate facing that Dodgers team that everybody laughed at for spending $800 million on four players last year. Whatever that was.
Yeah. By the way, at sportsbook.com, which has longer odds, the Mavericks are tied with the Grizzlies at 15-1.
That's really... am I drunk here? The Grizzlies are really good.
They do not like this Memphis
team. I'm not saying you should bet on them to win the West. I don't believe they're going to win the West, but the same odds of the Mavericks? Even before I was out on the Mavericks, that seemed crazy to me.
The thing is, you can talk yourself into this stuff, because for me, it's if you get past all the ideas of, and this is not like fun, it's not to say the other team will be fun. Like, Thunder Spurs in the Western Conference Finals again would be lots of fun. Like, that's a fun series. But it's still predictable. That if you ask me right now who's going to be in the Western Conference Finals, I'm going to say it's going to be Thunder and Spurs. Those are, to me, the two best teams in the West still. But once you start going down, here's what happens, and this is like gambler logic. If you're like, well, okay, they lost, you know, Harden's gone. Even though they won so many games last year and had a historic scoring differential, it still, quote-unquote, feels like the Thunder are worse. Like, everyone feels like the Thunder are not as good.
Yeah.
And whether they are or not is an interesting question, because we were going to find out in the playoffs last year, but then Westbrook got hurt, so we have no way of being able to tell. And then with the Spurs, it's, you know, what if Ginobili's really, like, this is it? Like, this is it. Like, Ginobili is done. Like, because to me, I honestly am kind of worried that Game 6 broke him.
But how much did he do for them last year in the regular season and even the playoffs?
I feel like he was a bigger force in the regular season than he was in the playoffs.
Let me look. I guess he had a 19 PER, played 60 games. I mean, he did not shoot well. For him, like 42, yeah. 35, 79. He averaged 11, 4, and 3.5, 4.5.
Even then, if you say, like, can Duncan really do this 2 years in a row, especially coming off of the finals? And then you've got Parker. He plays all the way through the finals, and then he goes and he plays in EuroLeague.
Yeah, he should be pretty tired.
EuroBasket, rather.
Yeah.
You know, and then you've got – they lost Gary Neal, and they added Marco Bellinelli, who people think is an upgrade, and I don't think so.
I don't think it's an upgrade. I just think it's a sidestep.
In general, the bench is the same.
Yeah.
But if you're like, you know, so you can talk. My point is not that, because again, I think the Spurs are going to be back in the Western Conference Finals. I think it's going to go probably Thunder Spurs 1-2 for the seeds. But you can talk yourself into it, and then all of a sudden you're looking at Clippers, Rockets, Warriors, Grizzlies. Like, that's really where you're at.
Yeah.
You know, and then it gets really interesting for what could happen. And the Clippers, I think, it's okay to put them at the top. I'm surprised there's so much at the top.
You know what I like laying a little money on? Those Lakers at 35-1.
They're 16-1 at Bovada. To put this in comparison, the Lakers are 16-1 the title at Bovada. The Timberwolves are 50-1.
That's about right. If you're going to bet on the Timberwolves, even at 50-1, to win the championship, just give me your money and I will burn it for you.
I'm also surprised the Blazers are so low.
To win?
Yeah.
I mean, they're not going to win the West.
No, it's not about whether they're going to win the West or not. It's about the fact that the determination of what the odds are, obviously it factors in what the action is and how much that plays into it. But the Blazers are significantly lower than the Pelicans and Timberwolves. What am I missing here that the Blazers are going to be – it's not saying they're going to be worse. I'd love to see odds on that, by the way. That's what they need to give me is who's going to be worse, and they just match up the teams and give me, like, you know?
Right.
Over-under is essentially that, but I actually want to bet on a team versus another team and wins. That's what I think I really want to do. But I think it's interesting to look at the fact that the Blazers are so low. And the Blazers are right now, if you factor odds to win the West and you interpret that as how good they're going to be in the Western Conference, the Blazers are the fourth worst team in the West, according to Sportsbook. That's crazy to me.
I mean, I like this Blazers team, but you can see them falling apart, right?
Yeah, but I can see the Pelicans falling apart.
Oh, sure.
The Lakers falling apart.
God, yeah, absolutely. You
know? I mean, the Dallas Mavericks are 15-1, Zach.
That's insane. Mavericks. That's insane. Even with Ricky Lito.
So that's what I think those are the things that were really kind of surprising me. I tell you, I pointed this out in the post. The only one where I'm kind of where like my wallet starts kind of just nudging me, like, hey, come here, just come here a second, let's just talk for a minute. Bulls Clippers is 35-1.
That's an intriguing little potential finals matchup.
Sorry, it's 30-1, but yeah.
That's a.
And if you're listening right now, this is based on what I refer to as the Heat fail prerogative, which is if you conceptualize that basically the Heat made the finals 3 years in a row, right? That's extremely difficult. I'm trying to think of the last team that made the finals 4 years in a row.
The Boston Celtics? I don't know.
Gotta be 80 Celtics, right?
Well, you know, even then, they didn't make it 4 years in a row, I don't think.
This is what I'm saying. It doesn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, and the Bulls would have made it with Jordan, I feel very
comfortable. Oh, no, the Boston Celtics did make it 4 years in a row in the 80s. 84-87.
There you go. And so it's just that this is really difficult. And yes, they lost that first year. And I still think that if you're like I you know who's if you ask me who's going to win the NBA title, my immediate answer is the Miami Heat. I don't have to think about it. I don't even don't have to put anything into this. But again, if you're gambling and you're like, well, but if the Heat don't make it,
I also like that that Rockets Pacers final. It's 55-1.
Yeah, that one actually is. I thought about that too. That's actually kind of interesting, right? Like, what if Harden and Howard just click immediately? Like, this team just comes out of nowhere, and adding Dwight Howard and having him play next to the best player on a team that's not dysfunctional he's ever played on. You know, they just click immediately, and then you can make the argument. I'm really leaning Bulls right now. I'm still waiting. I'm waiting till the very last minute to make my season predictions, but I'm leaning really hard for Bulls as the second best team in the East right now.
Yeah, I mean that's probably the correct bet.
Well, and part of it is based on I was like, are the Pacers just a team that doesn't super excel in the regular season?
Yeah, they might be.
That to me could be very possible.
It depends on how much of their scoring was fixed this offseason.
Because they were definitively the second best team in the East last year, but they finished behind the Knicks.
Yeah, I mean a big part of that was just their terrible start.
Yeah,
but the terrible start was Danny Granger wasn't with them when they thought he would be. Roy Hibbert had a wrist injury, like
fluky stuff. But still, if they have like 1 month that's just absolutely horrendous.
Yeah,
which could happen because their offense is so bad.
Yeah, it's very true. I mean, you would think the second unit will fix that with C.J. Watson, with Luis Scola, with Danny Granger in the second unit. If that's how it's going to shake out. Chris Copeland, like they added a lot of offensive weapons to that second unit, but that doesn't mean it's going to be a cohesive unit right away.
So the odds are longer on the Spurs to win the West, but the Spurs versus Heat is the second most likely finals matchup.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a weird kind of there's a couple of weird ways that everything kind of shook out. Heat Rockets is 12-1. That one's pretty sexy. Heat Clippers is 13-1. That was the other thing, is they're really high on Clippers to win the West and then not as high on them to make the finals versus the Heat. God.
Yeah,
it's odd. So yeah, some interesting stuff in there. We're gonna do over unders here in probably a week and a half, 2 weeks, somewhere in there.
Yeah, about 2 weeks.
That'll be a lot of fun. You know, we'll enjoy that because there are some really fun ones in there.
I do enjoy that quite a bit. Before we go, DeMarcus Cousins said some nice words last night.
I didn't catch that. I saw him yelling at Bogut.
No, this is after the game. They asked him about this compared to previous offensive systems under this system being under Mike Malone, and he said this was the first offensive system he's played in. By the way, he's entering year four of his career.
Hey, anybody want to throw down a flashlight to Keith Smart under that bus so he can see how to get out? Cause...
Well, at least, I mean, it's not like Keith Smart defended him time and time again before finally breaking. So, you know, it's not like he ever had his back.
He's got to get along with Malone. If he doesn't get along with Malone, that's going to be it. You can't chew through three coaches. You can't do that in this league.
Right.
You know?
You've got to produce a lot more if you're going to do that.
Yeah. He was going right at Bogut, and man, when he got David Lee on him.
How'd that work, though? He was 2 of 10. He had 5 turnovers.
It didn't go well because he kept having things like one time he had him in position, there was an illegal defense call. And then another time he had him in position, there was an off-ball foul. And then another one, he wound up traveling, but it was kind of an odd thing. Oh, I wanted to give you a heads up. Have you caught the delay of game stuff yet?
I have not.
Just be prepared. It's probably gonna bug you for a little bit. The players are having some trouble with it adjusting. The new delay of game rules state that it's a really in typical NBA fashion because you want to give the referee some leeway. It makes sense, but the new rules stipulate that you can't interfere with the ball after a basket is made.
Yeah.
That means is if you reach up and dunk the ball or lay it in and then it drops through and you grab it and just toss it anywhere, that's delay game. Like, you have to basically score and then run back the other way. If you toss it to the official, he's probably not going to tag you. If you do the knock it out of bounds thing, you're going to get tagged.
Yeah.
And personally, I love this rule because I have I have an obsession with fairness. And so I hate this concept of, like, basically, in my opinion, the minute that bucket is scored, the minute the ball goes through the hoop to the other side of the cylinder, that ball belongs to the other team. The now offensive team that belongs to the other team, and they have the right to take that ball. And like, you should have the ability to push the ball on made baskets as well as on defensive rebounds. Like, you should be able to push the ball whenever.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
So the other team knocking that ball out of bounds to slow you down and force you to inbound it slower, that bugs me. I'm like, no, the other team now has possession of the ball. They get to decide what they do with it. If you want to slow them down, pressure them, you know?
I actually like that. It didn't come up in last night's game that I was at, but it's if we want to make these games quicker, I don't know that it necessarily makes it quicker, but at least the pace feels quicker. So when we have those 45-minute last 2 minutes of the games, at least we got to that point feeling like the game was going quicker.
Yeah, they're really focused on. I do kind of like it, and everyone gets mad because they basically want the NBA to like make less money, like have fewer timeouts, don't have the TV timeouts, all these kind of things, and it's like, be reasonable.
Right.
The NBA is going to make as much money as it can. That's what its function is. That's why it exists, and that's you're never gonna get anywhere basically saying give up on some money. It's not going to happen.
Have you ever been to an NFL game?
Right.
It's pretty insufferable. Just the amount of standing around you see everybody do because of the constant TV timeouts. Yeah, that's why I'd much rather stay home and watch a game on CBS.
Oh, well done. Oh, before one more thing before we go. You were at the game. A guy proposed at a preseason game.
That's not lasting.
Am I being a jerk about this? Because everyone's like, tickets are so expensive. Like, I know tickets are expensive, and I get that. And it's like, if she's like a huge Celtics fan, and that's like her life, and she all she does is like focus on it. You're giving her a memory, even though you can't afford to pay tickets for a game. And I'm not, that's not like a, like, you're poor. I can't afford tickets to go to an NBA game. Like, I'm glad they let me in the building because
right.
I can't go.
Right.
You know, I don't have $250. That just doesn't. I don't have that. So I'm trying to be nice, but at the same time, I'm just like, I'm willing to forgive the proposing at a sporting event thing, even though I think it's terrible, because I'm like, well, it's relationship dependent. If the girl you're going to marry just loves attention,
By the way, if that's the case, that'll be fun.
That'll be fun for you. If he or she loves attention, then that's fine. But to do it in a preseason game, I was just like, oh, come on, man. You can't – it's preseason. Kelly Olynyk is on the floor. Like, he's the best player on the floor
right now.
That's
the reason.
By the way, you better be prepared. The Kelly Olynyk surge of excitement and hype in Boston is off the chain right now.
Don't look at me. I'm probably going to pick him as the rookie of the year just because.
Didn't you call him a duck in traffic?
Defensively, sure, but all you got to do is score. Be rookie of the year, all you got to do is score.
The rookies are big on him. They voted him most likely to win rookie of the year.
He is a guy that they seem to respect just from a scoring standpoint. Because it's like,
yeah,
you know, I don't think anyone worries about him defensively, about him defending them. But like, he can score. Like he's a legit, like he could be a legit like Carl Landry in this league off the bench.
Maybe we're off on this. Maybe he's the next big thing.
No, he's not. He's definitely not. But he could still win Rookie of the Year. The whole proposal, like, I've never known a girl, and I've ended up having this conversation a lot with friends. Is like, I've just never known a girl that has said, "Oh, if somebody proposed to me at a sporting event, I would definitely say yes." Like, it's always been like, I could have a great relationship with that guy. That's not going to happen. Like, I'm not saying yes at that time. And that's, it just seems like a, and maybe you're right. Maybe it is a, maybe she's a huge Celtics fan. And that was the time to do it. And he want, you know, you don't want to wait till the regular season. Like, you want to get engaged now. And maybe that's the case. And if so, you know, mazel tov or whatever the kids say. But it's, for the kids at home, it's not a good look.
My wife was saying that she's like, well, I would. She's like, but you feel so pressure. Like, everyone's looking at you. You want to like destroy the guy on the Jumbotron on
maybe
television.
Maybe that's the tactic. You're getting like, a definite yes.
No.
Yeah.
And then, so I made the joke. Yes, yes, 1,000 times. Yes, we will talk about this later. Yes, we will talk about this later.
Actually, kids, when you get engaged someday, do it at a sporting event on the Jumbotron, because.
They can't say no.
It's rare that they're going to say no in that situation. And then they're just a liar if they go back on that. So that's your pro tip for the day.
Pro tip for the day. Always propose a sporting event.
Always.
Thanks, Zach.
Thanks, Matt.